Never has there been a stranger time for the feasts and the fasts of our many faiths than in this era of the coronavirus. Feasting and fasting were always times when we feasted together as a community, or we shared the challenges of fasting. Whether it was the Passover supper or the days of Lent approaching Easter, or the daily fasting and feasting of Muslims for the entire month of Ramadan. Here we are today, early in the month of Ramadan, when 1.6 billion Muslims, like the rest of us, must sort out whether and how to keep a safe distance between each other for the sake of their lives, and yet commemorate the most powerful tradition of their faith. A practice that was begun in the year 624, nearly 1400 years ago. Muhammad, the founder of the Muslim faith, established the fasting and feasting of Ramadan to celebrate his experience of revelation that transformed him from merchant to prophet. When he was just 40 years old, during the month of Ramadan, he was meditating daily in a cave on Mount Jabal al-Nur near Mecca in Saudi Arabia, when the angel Gabriel appeared to him each day and relayed the word of God, and these revelations became the Quran. The rules that Muhammad set were for adults to fast each day between sunrise and sunset, and then feast after sunset and have breakfast before dawn. The hours without meals were to be a time of spiritual renewal, of cleansing of the soul. Muslims refrain not only from food and drink, but also from smoking, sex, and sinning, and devote themselves to prayer, to reciting the Quran, and to acts of charity. I have found myself wondering about the different meanings of feasting and fasting and how we human beings got that way. Feasting seems so much easier to understand throughout the hundreds of thousands of years of our human history. Our forebears had the pleasure of eating the sweet fruits and of the land in season, and the gifts of ripe crops at harvest time, and the meat of animals they captured or raised as food. Most cultures have holidays when people gather for feasts to celebrate times of special happiness, births and weddings and triumphs that mark the peaks of their history. But fasting, that's another matter. How did it appear in our human behavior? And do other animals fast? Some species of animals have dramatic changes in their feeding behavior, often related to the seasons. Bears who hibernate in the winter eat very little. They just come out very occasionally as they sleep in the caves, and they emerge so scrawny and hungry in the springtime. Migrating birds, who used to spend all day scrounging for food, will then, when migrating, day after day, fly nonstop by daylight to their new nesting grounds. Salmon, in their mating season, start an unbroken fast as they spend the many weeks of their journey from the sea going upstream back to the pools where they were once hatched. And they breed and meet the end of their lives. Our closest evolutionary ancestors, the chimpanzees, give us a view of fasting that's more like our own. As long ago as the 1870s, zookeepers recorded the rage and grief of chimpanzees when they lost an inseparable companion or an old friend. For days afterwards, they acted subdued and ate very little. Jane Goodall followed a chimpanzee that she'd named Flint for a few days after the death of Flint's friend Flo. That chimpanzee would stare down at the empty nest, standing motionless, and was lethargic and refused food. Goodall wrote that Flint was hollow-eyed, gaunt, and utterly depressed. Well, I never had a pet chimpanzee, but I had a cat who went on a fast. Whether it was out of grief or fear or rage, she found herself displaced from being my baby when I adopted my tiny baby daughter. Rosie just quit eating no matter what favorite cat food I put out. After a few days, I was scared she was going to die. Then a thought struck me. Though my baby was just feeding on formula out of a bottle, I bought a jar of Gerber's baby food chicken, and I showed it to my cat. And I said, "Rosie, see the picture? That's a baby. This is food for babies. You're my baby, Rosie. And I'm putting this baby food in your dish because I love you too." So I spooned the chicken puree into her dish. She put her head down, ate every bit of it. And that was the end of her fast. Well, so much for animal fasting. The first story about human religious fasting that I could find in the Old Testament sounded a lot like that chimpanzee Flint. It had to do with sorrow and fear over the looming death of a child. King David was in bad trouble for a hot bit of mischief. He had fallen in love with Bathsheba, so he secretly arranged to slay her husband, Uriah the Hittite, his powerful rival. And he took Bathsheba as one of his wives. But his court prophet Nathan got wind of his wickedness and warned him that God was going to strike to death the baby that David had just had with Bathsheba. And this is how the words go in the Bible. "And the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bare unto David, and it was very sick. David therefore besought God for the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night upon the earth. And the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him up from the earth. But he would not, neither would he eat bread with him. And it came to pass on the seventh day that the child died. And the servants of David feared to tell him that the child was dead. For they said, 'Well, behold, when the child was yet alive, we spake unto him, and he would not hearken unto our voice. How he will then vex himself if we tell him that the child is dead.' But when David saw his servants were whispering, David perceived that the child was dead. Therefore, child said unto his servants, 'Is the child dead?' And they said, 'He is dead.' Then David arose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel and came into the house of the Lord and worshiped. Then he came to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him, and he did eat. Then his servants said, "What thing is this that thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, thou didst rise and eat bread." And David said, "While the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God is gracious to me that the child may live? But now he's dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." So David had kept his fast out of fear of God's wrath, in the hope that by punishing himself by fasting and lying on the bare earth, that God would relent and let that child live. And then he ended fast when all hope was gone, and he had nothing further to beseech from God. In some ways, David's fast was like a hunger strike that asks the powerful to relent and change its ways. As cultures have evolved over the centuries, the ancient rite of fasting has taken on different meanings. For some leaders of their faith, it was fasting rather than feasting they viewed as the command of God. 400 years after the death of Jesus, who enjoyed his Last Supper, Saint Augustine imagined his God as one who despised all earthly pleasures. Well, sexuality was the worst of sins, and delighting in eating was next to the worst. Saint Augustine wrote in his Confessions, "You, God, command us to control our bodily desires. It is truly your command that I should be continent and restrain myself from gratification of corrupt nature. You commanded me not to commit fornication. Though you did not forbid me to marry, you counseled me to take a better course." And there is another evil which we meet day by day. For we repair the daily wastage of our bodies by eating and drinking until the time comes when you will bring both food and our animal nature to an end. But for the present, I find pleasure in this need, though I fight against it for fear of becoming its captive. Every day I wage war upon it by fasting. Time and again, I force my body to obey me. As in the observance of Ramadan, both water and food must be put aside, along with sex and sin. Saint Augustine in his Catholicism and Muhammad in his Muslim faith seem close indeed in their profound conviction that sexual abstinence and fasting will satisfy the commands of God. It's just that Muhammad commanded a month of fasting, while Saint Augustine tried to fast every day of the year. You know, it seems extraordinary that people of faith would be asked by their deity, their creator, to put aside exactly those appetites that have until now ensured the survival of humankind. I find myself instead living with the earlier voices of the Judeo-Christian faith. In a passage from Ecclesiastes, a passionate voice tells us, "It is God's gift that all should eat and drink and take pleasure in all their toil. And the prophet Isaiah, he spoke out against fasting. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. You shall not fast as you do this day to make your voice to be heard on high. Is this such a fast that I have chosen? A day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? Is not rather this the fast that I've chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke. In this extraordinary era of our lives, whether we feast or fast, we know that we shall not blind ourselves to the bonds of wickedness that allow the poor and those lacking privilege and power to bear the now deadliest burdens of our carelessness. We shall not blind ourselves to the assaults upon truth that erode all efforts to protect and save our brothers and sisters around this world. We face a time that asks for answers to mysteries we've never confronted before. In these days of unprecedented danger and destruction, let's take joy, let's take pleasure in our toil to find a way toward healing. This, I believe, and this is my prayer. So be it.